A morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Mem Hey. We are on the very top of Mem Hey Amud Aleph, and we are in the third parak of Shabbos. We're learning the halachas of Muksa. This is going to be the third day now in this parak that we are discussing in Yanei Muksa. As we already been discussing now for a couple of days, there are a range of positions amongst the Tanaim. Exactly what is the scope of Muksa? Muksa, items on Shabbos that are not set aside for Shabbos, are going to be prohibited to move on Shabbos. As we quoted the Rambam already a couple of times, so the Rambam gives a number of explanations of why it is exactly that the Chachamim prohibited the movement of Muksa. But the basic idea, says the Rambam, is that Shabbos is a special day. The Chachamim wanted Shabbos to feel like a special day, and so therefore those things that are not specific to Shabbos and not necessary for Shabbos, so the Chachamim had a gzera that one is not allowed to move those items on Shabbos. That's the gzera of Muksa. Obviously, it's a rabbinic legislation. It's a gzera d'rabbanan. And now we're discussing in the course of the Gemara the scope of Muksa. We have been pointing out, and yesterday we really saw clearly that there is a range of positions amongst the Tanaim. Exactly what is the scope of Muksa? And the range goes from Rabbi Huda to Rabbi Meir to Rabbi Shimon. And then we even added yesterday a fourth Tana, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. We'll start with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda has the widest scope of Muksa. Rabbi Yehuda has categories of Muksa Machmas Isser, Muksa Machmas Mius. Something is prohibited. Something is disgusting. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, those are items, even though they're Kalim, those are items which are going to be Muksa on Shabbos. Rabbi Meir, as we pointed out yesterday, subscribes to Muksa Machmas Mius, but not necessarily Muksa Machmas Isser. Rav Yehuda doesn't subscribe to either Muksa Machmas Mios, neither Muksa Machmas Mios nor Muksa Machmas Isser. And then Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, which we commented just very briefly yesterday, doesn't even agrees with his father, doesn't subscribe to these categories of Muksa, but on the other hand, he's even more lenient than his father, as we pointed out in yesterday's shiur. So those are the positions amongst the Tanaim. You're going to hear throughout the Gemara, when the Gemara discusses the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon leisle muksa. He doesn't hold of muksa. And as we already pointed out a number of times, that sheet of Rabbi Shimon is not as binary as the Gemara itself indicates. Meaning Rabbi Shimon does subscribe to a little degree to the concept of muksa and the application of muksa. And so even though you're going to hear in the Gemara Rabbi Shimon leisle muksa, it just simply means relative to the other Tanaim. He does not have nearly the wide scope of Muksa that the other Tanaim subscribe to. Where do the Amoraim stand on this issue? So that a little bit we discussed yesterday, and we're going to be discussing it much more extensively today in terms of where the Amoraim stand on the issue of Muksa. We noted yesterday that the Shita of Rav is that he subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara challenged yesterday based on the Mishnah and Kalim. The Mishnah and Kalim brought down a scenario in which we were talking about a wagon, we were talking about a wheel, and there was muksa within the wheel. So the Gemara says that presumably that wheel that had muksa in it had it during the Bein HaShemashos period. And once the money is out of the wheel had some sort of tocha, had some sort of base kibble. Once the money is out of the wheel, so then the wheel is no longer muksa. And so the Gemara says, fine, as far as Rav is concerned, that's the Mishnah and Kalim, that's very nice. But then Mishnah and Kalim subscribes to the Shita Rabbi Shimon, and Rav himself doesn't subscribe to that viewpoint. Rav rather subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. So the first Amara that we started discussing yesterday, and where he stands on the issue of Muksa, is Rav. And the Gemara pointed out that as far as Rav himself is concerned, he subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda, not of Rabbi Shimon. Another idea, another concept that we discussed yesterday, is that when does the Muksa status take effect? So it takes effect during the Bein HaShemashos period. And as we pointed out yesterday, and we're going to revisit this idea again today, Migu Dizkatze Bein HaShemashos, once something becomes Muksa during the Bein HaShemashos period, it becomes Muksa for the balance of Shabbos. Although we also pointed out yesterday, again, just a little bit more review, we also pointed out yesterday that Rabbi Shimon, in his limited scope of Muksa, doesn't subscribe to that principle. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, even if something were muksa during the Bein HaShemashos period, let's say, for example, when you light your Shabbos licht, so that lantern, that lamp, is going to be muksa while the fire is lit. So Rabbi Shimon says, that's fine. But once the fire goes out, so then the lamp is no longer muksa. So we see clearly that according to Rabbi Shimon, he does not subscribe to the principle, to the concept of migu diskatzai ben ashmashos ben itzkatzai kula yoma. With all that stated, now we are going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. And we are starting on the very top of Mem Hamad Aleph. And the Gemara now continues, Hachanami Mistabra, the Ravka Rabbi Yehuda Sfirulei. It makes a lot of sense to suggest that Rav, in fact, holds like Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar Rav Menicha Ner Agabe Dekel B'Shabbos. The Ein Menicha Ner Agabe Dekel B'Yom Tov. Because we have the following halacha by Rav, and that is that on Shabbos, one could take his lamp and hang it on Shabbos. Somehow, it would be advantageous to him to put a lamp on a palm tree. I don't know, maybe he's eating outside. Whatever. The halacha is, according to Rav, is that you could take your lamp and put it on the palm tree on Shabbos. However, you cannot do so on Yom Tov. Now, the Gemara says, let's consider. So if we're suggesting that Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, so then Hainu Deshana bin Shabbos Yom Tov. Then I totally understand what the difference is between Shabbos versus Yom Tov. Meaning, let's consider. Both on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to climb a tree. We're going to learn this together in Masechta Beitza. It is Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. One is not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos. So, let's think this through. On Shabbos, that Nair is going to be Moksa. Again, it's a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. But let's assume that we're holding like Rabbi Yehuda. So on Shabbos, that Nair is going to be Moksa. So if that Nair is going to be Moksa on Shabbos, so then, can I put the Nair on the tree on Shabbos? Well, I'm not allowed to climb the tree. Ah, but if I subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm also not allowed to touch the Nair for the duration of Shabbos. So then it would be no problem. Then you can totally understand why it is that the Chachamim would allow you to put the Nair on the palm tree going into Shabbos, because although I'm not allowed to climb the palm tree, I'm also not allowed to touch the Nair. Makes perfect sense. But on Yom Tov, here, on Yom Tov, we know that you're allowed to make a fire on Yom Tov. And again, I just want to add parenthetically, you're not allowed to start a fire on Yom Tov. You can transfer from one flame to another. We're going to learn this together in Masechta Beitza. But anyway, but we all understand. On Yom Tov, you could work with fire. And so that means that on Yom Tov, the Nair is not Moksa. Not because there's no Moksa on Yom Tov, simply because the allowance on Yom Tov to work with fire allows you now to come into contact with the Nair and to move the Nair. Oh, so that's why you can't put the Nair on the palm tree on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov, the Nair is not Moksa, and so therefore you'd be tempted to climb the tree. All this makes sense, as the Gemara has just pointed out, if in fact Rav subscribed to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Ella, but continuing in the Gemara, Iyamarka Rabbi Shimon Sfirulei, but if in fact Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, sorry, if Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon, so Mali Shabbos, Mali Yom Tov, so then there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, the lamp after it goes out is not Moksa. As much as there'd be concern that you'd want to climb the tree in order to take the lamp on Yom Tov, there should equally be a concern that you want to climb the tree and take the lamp on Shabbos. So therefore, we're of the conclusion right now that Rav holds, in fact, like Rabbi Yehuda. And he subscribes to the larger scope of Moksa. V'rabka Rabbi Yehuda Sfirulei, the Gemara continues. V'ha'ba minei d'Rav, the Gemara says, yeah, but wasn't the following question asked to Rav? Ma l'tatu l'shraga d'chanukah mikameh chavar b'shabasa? Is a person allowed to move his Chanukah menorah from the Chavei Rai? We discussed them earlier in the Masechta, and they come up here again on Daf Mem Hei. And v'amalu shaper dami. And the question was posed to Rav, and Rav says, yes, it's fine. Now, what we're describing over here is Chanukah and Friday night. And back then, in Bavel, so they lived amongst a group of people who were not particularly good people. They were referred to as Chaverai. Now, usually when we use the word Chaverim in the Gemara, that's a very positive term. But over here, and I'm probably not pronouncing it correctly, we're describing the Chaverai. So they're a group of people who probably had a lot of political position in Bavel, and they had a certain holiday. Now, Rashi also over here offers, in fact, two pshatim. I'm just going to go with the second pshat in Rashi. Inami, Rashi writes, B'yom chagam, eimanichem lidlok or, elabeves avodah zara. So they had a particular festival that happened to have coincided with Hanukkah, and one is not allowed to light a light outside during this festival, and it would be very dangerous to do so. And so the question was, is that on Friday night when the Hanukkah menorah went out, so can we take the menorah and bring them inside? And if we don't, obviously it'll pose a significant challenge. Now, when I say a challenge, so it definitely bears wondering, curiosity in terms of what we're talking about. If we're talking about Sakas Nefashos, so then presumably the answer would be yes. Okay. But even as I say that, it's not super clear cut, because if we're talking about something which falls under the category of Kiddush Hashem, maybe the answer is no. So admittedly over here, it is it's a lengthier discussion in terms of what kind of challenge we're talking about, but it definitely poses a challenge. I'll just say it nice and simple. And so therefore the question that was posed to Rav is on Friday night after the Chanukah menorah goes out, can we bring it inside? Now the Chanukah menorah is in fact muktzah. And the question was posed to Rav, are we allowed to bring it inside? And his response was, Shapir Dami, yeah, you can bring it inside. And so the Gemara right now is thinking that his answer is predicated on the fact that he subscribes to the Sheet of Rabbi Shimon and not the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. But as we just got done concluding, Rav subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara's response is Shasa Tchak Shani. So the Gemara says, no, that's not necessarily so. Rav really holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And over here, his ruling going like Rabbi Shimon is only because it was a Shas HaDchak. And the Gemara says exactly this point. Shas HaDchak Shani, this is a time of dire straits. And so therefore an allowance was given to be able to bring the Chanukah lanterns inside. Dehamar Leh Rav Kahana Rav Ashi LeRav, because the following was said from both the students of Rav, Rav Kahana Rav Ashi to the Rebbe Rav, Hachi Hilchasa, is this in fact the Halacha? So here in this dialogue, we see clearly that this is Shitas Rabbi Shimon. And what Rav is saying is, yes, that's a Shita Rabbi Shimon. And I normally don't subscribe to the Shita Rabbi Shimon, but this is a Shasa Tchak. And so under these circumstances, one is in fact allowed to be Mako. The Gemara now continues and discusses and explores the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. As we pointed out, Rabbi Shimon has a very limited scope of Moksa. And so the Gemara now wants to know, within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, what exactly is going to be Moksa according to Rabbi Shimon? Because so far, very little has been Moksa. And so what we're going to try to describe is that according to Rabbi Shimon, what exactly is Moksa? And basically, we're going to try to quantify what exactly is the threshold in which some will make something muksa according to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Vamine Reish Lakish Rav Yochan, the following was asked from Reish Lakish Rav Yochan, Chitim Shazarim Bekarku, Veitzim Shetachas Tarnagolas Mahu. What if you took wheat and planted it in the ground? Or what if you took an egg and placed it under a hen? Probably so that it would develop under the hen. And over here, in terms of putting wheat in the ground, we have to say over here that the wheat has not yet taken root. If the wheat has taken root, so then we are not going to be having a muksa discussion. We're going to be having a malacha discussion. Because obviously ripping out something that is rooted in the ground is the malacha of kotzer or tolesh. And so therefore, we have to say over here at this point in time that the seed was just planted in the ground and it has not yet taken root. And so the question now becomes the following. According to Rabbi Shimon, we're clearly, I'm taking something and putting it away, putting it aside, and I'm clearly not interested in its use, in the immediate usage. So under these circumstances, would these items file under the category of muksa according to Rabbi Shimon? When does Rabbi Shimon not subscribe to muksa? When I don't positively remove something from my mind. But maybe over here where I did a positive action that clearly indicates that this item now is not going to be used by me for the immediate future, maybe Rabbi Shimon would say that and concede that this in fact would have the status of muksa over the course of Shabbos. Oh, dimaloshna, or maybe not. Maybe even under these circumstances, Rabbi Shimon does not incorporate this in his very limited category of muksa. Now, if I could just point out to all of us that we already saw yesterday's daf that Rabbi Shimon already has some degree of muksa. Remembering yesterday, we talked about the lighting of the kos and the ka'ara, going back to Memdalad Amad Aleph, where Rabbi Shimon was of the opinion that if I light on Shabbos using an extraordinarily big cup or a big bowl, and I know that this is going to be lit over the course of the entirety of Shabbos, so Rabbi Shimon says that in fact is going to be muksa. Because since when you lit it, you know it was going to be lit for the entirety of Shabbos. So therefore, when you're lighting it, that is going to be something that is in your mind, going to be something that is not, that you will not be able to make usage of. Meaning, when I say usage, I mean, you move the item itself. Obviously, you can get benefit from its light. but you cannot make usage of it for the entirety of Shabbos, and therefore the Gemara said, conceded that according to Rabbi Shimon, that's going to be Muksa. So we already saw yesterday that Rabbi Shimon has examples of what is going to be Muksa. What we're trying to do in our Gemara over here is more give more than just examples, but give some sort of parameter in terms of what exactly makes something muksa according to Rabbi Shimon, and that's why the Gemara right now is trying to give this definition of dachya v'yadayim, that if I were to do something positively to remove it from my mind for Shabbos, is that going to be something which categorically is going to be muksa according to Rabbi Shimon? Amar Leih, the response that Rabbi Yochanan gives to his brother-in-law, to his chavrus, Reish Lakish, Amar Leih muksa le Rabbi Shimon, el shemen shebener b'shashu dolek. The only thing that's muksa, according to Rabbi Shimon, is only when there is going to be oil in the lamp, and only that's while it's lit. And hold the huksa l'mitzvasa, and the reason why is that it's huksa l'mitzvasa, huksa l'isura. Well, since it is both huksa for the mitzvah and huksa for the isser as well. Now, it sounds like from the Gemara that we are describing now basically two factors that are going to make something for muksa towards for the position of Rabbi Shimon. When I'm lighting my licht on Friday night, and I'm lighting it on Friday afternoon for Friday night, so there are two factors involved. Number one, it's a mitzvah. What mitzvah am I doing when I'm lighting? So I'm following the words of the Chachamim who instructed us to light. But on top of that, as we already discussed back in the second parak, there's a mitzvah of kavod, there's a mitzvah of oneg, there's a mitzvah of shalom bayis. Okay, we already discussed the degree of mitzvah that one accomplishes when one lights. So on one hand, when the candles are actually lit on Friday night, so it's huksal mitzvah. Additionally, it's also huksal isuro. We know that when it's lit, I'm not allowed to put it out. And so therefore, putting it out would constitute an iser. And so therefore, it is a item which also presents to it Isser as well. So when the Shabbos candles are lit on Friday night, there are two factors that are involved, mitzvah and Isser. And because there are two factors that are involved, so then something becomes muksa. However, if there's only one factor involved, either mitzvah or Isser, that in of itself will not be enough to generate the status of muksa according to Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara goes and pushes back on this point. You mean to tell me that according to Rabbi Shimon, he doesn't subscribe to the idea of huksa l'mitzvah? The Gemara says, I think you're wrong. I think he does. Meaning, even if there's only one factor, even if it's only huksa l'mitzvah, I still think that Rabbi Shimon subscribes to the principle of muksa. And the Gemara says, and I'll make my case. So here we're describing the sukkah on the yontif of sukkahs. And I put the schach on the sukkah, the itra, and then the decorations. And the decorations are made up of kramim, sedinim, hametzuyarim. So basically we're putting up murals all over the sukkah. V'talaba, it goes in arfarsakim, shkedim v'rimonim. And on top of that we're hanging nuts, peaches, almonds, pomegranates. V'afar chalei shal anavim v'atar shal shibolim. We're hanging up grapes and we're hanging up grains. Yenush manim b'slasos, and we're putting up wine, oil, and flour. We're going to obviously say over here that the flour is in some sort of container, as is the wine, as is the oil, and they're hung up all over the sukkah. Asur l'stapik mehem ad motzei yom tov ha'acharon, and you cannot get benefit from these items once they are designated as noy sukkah, as decorations for sukkah. So they are now huksa l'mitzvaso. They're set aside for the muksa. They're set aside as a muksa, because they are set aside for the mitzvah. And you can't get benefit from them, not even until the end of Shmini Atzeres, right? That's Ad Motzei Yom Tov Acharon. V'im Hisna Aleihem. Now, if it happens to be that if you make a Tanai, Hakol Afi Tanah, meaning when you hang up all these fruit and you say to them, going into Yontif, then I know I'm hanging them up as Noi Sukkah, but with the condition that I am going to make usage of them over the course of Yontif, so a Tanai works under these circumstances. But short of the Tanai, they're going to have the status of Muksa. So you see over here this concept of Huksa L'mitzvah. Now, here's the trick. The trick is is that this braisa is not attributed to a Tana. And the Gemara is only asking this question, assuming that the author of this braisa is Rabbi Shimon, and in just a moment the Gemara is going to wonder, well, how did you know that the author of this braisa is Rabbi Shimon? Can't we just simply say that the author of the braisa is Rabbi Yehuda? And that's where the Gemara is going to go to next. Before we move on in the Gemara, however, let's deal with a question that is raised by Tosfos. It's a wonderful question. And that is as follows. You can see this in Tosfos. Dibur HaMaschad Motzei Yom Tov Acharon Shel Chag. The Gemara right now, obviously, is assuming that the author of this braisa is Rabbi Shimon. And so, therefore, you see that if something is Huksa LeMitzvah, so Rabbi Shimon would call that Muksa, because that's clearly what the braisa is teaching us. And the Gemara is just simply now out to prove that the author of the braisa is Rabbi Shimon. Tosos quotes in the name of Rabbeinu Tam that, wait one second, how can the author of this braisa be Rabbi Shimon? Because when can I not enjoy from the Noi Sukkah? So not for the 7 days of Sukkot, and the braisa adds, and Shmini Atzeres as well. Now I know it gets a little bit confusing here in Golos because we sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, as the Gemara in Sukkah tells us to do, but that's because of Sveika Diyuma. But for a moment, let's put that aside for now, and let's just deal with the fact that Min HaTorah, I sit in the Sukkah for how many days? 7. And on the 8th day, we don't sit in the Sukkah, because the mitzvah of Sukkah is only for 7 days. Shmini Atzeres, there's no mitzvah of Sukkah. And so then why is the Noi Sukkah going to be Muksa for Shmini Atzeres? So it's predicated on the fact that because it was Muksa during the Bein HaShemashos, meaning as the 7th day of Sukkah now turns into Shmini Atzeres, so you have that Bein HaShemashos period. And that Bein HaShemashos period now is Safek Yom, Safek Laila, as we discussed back a couple of days ago in the Daf. So it's Safek Yom, Safek Laila. And since I'm not allowed to enjoy the Noi Sukkah during the Bein HaShemashos period, so therefore now it's going to be Muksa for the balance of the 8th day. But Tosfos says, but wait one second, if you think about it, that is the principle of Migu Dizkatzei Bein HaShemashos Dizkatzei Kula Yomo. Now go back to yesterday's Daf. We said clearly in yesterday's Daf that Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the principle of Migu Dizkatzei Bein HaShemashos Dizkatzei Kula Yomo. And so therefore, even as the Gemara now is entertaining the idea that this braisa is authored by Rabbi Shimon, but it can't be simply by virtue of the fact that according to Rabbi Shimon, if you would ask Rabbi Shimon, would it be Muksa on Shmini Atzeres? Rabbi Shimon, of course, would say no. It's not Muksa on Shmini. Meaning, even if Rabbi Shimon subscribed to Muksa in this scenario because it's Muksa on the mitzvah, but he wouldn't say that it's Muksa for Shmini Atzeres because Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the principle of Migu Dizkatzei Bein HaShemashos. And of course we know that going back to yesterday's daf, because we already repeated it again today, we know that that according to Rabbi Shimon, once the lamp goes out on Friday night, so then you're allowed to benefit from that lamp. You can move the lamp. So you see that Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the principle of Migu Dizkatzei. So over here, the Gemara is suggesting that this braisa is going like Rabbi Shimon, but Tosfos says, but that can't be, because according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no way that it would be Muksan Shmini Atzeres. Tosfos' question, see Tosfos for a possible suggestion, but if you think about it, it's so wonderful. It's such a strong question on the Gemara over here. We're going to go back to the Gemara, and we're going to see now how the Gemara is going to try to prove that the author of the braisa is in fact Rabbi Shimon. Umi Maida Rabbi Shimon. How do I know that the author of the braisa is Rabbi Shimon? Did ni Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef kameid Rabbi Yochanan? Because the following was taught in front of Rabbi Yochanan. We have now another braisa. Ain notlin eitzim in a sukkah b'yamtov. One is not allowed to take wood from the sukkah on yamtov. Now this is a little bit confusing. So, for the purposes of clarity, we're talking about a sukkah, but not a sukkah. Meaning, we're simply talking about a hut, that a gazebo, that were a pergola that one built outside, and one is planning on yamtov to sit outside in this sukkah. But sukkah not with a capital S, with a lowercase s. Meaning, it's Pesach or it's Shavuos. And they decided that the weather's beautiful and we're going to eat outside. And we're going to eat outside in the sukkah. Now, it's yantiv, so you can take wood. Wood is not muksa on yantiv because you could use it as fuel. Can I take any wood from the actual sukkah itself on Pesach and Shavuos? And the answer, of course, is no, you can't. Why? Because if this wood is part of the structure of the sukkah, so taking that wood would be a violation of stira. I'm now disassembling my sukkah on yantiv, and that, of course, you're not allowed to do. So you can't take the wood of a sukkah over here, lowercase s, right? Lowercase samech, We all get it. You can't take the wood of the sukkah on Yantav, on Shavuos, and on Pesach, but Elamina Samachla. But if there is some wood which is not part of the structure of the sukkah, so then that you're allowed to use, and you can make usage of that wood. Rabbi Shimon Matir, now Rabbi Shimon said it would be fine. Now, you could take the wood of the sukkah. Now, just to try to be clear about this point, Rabbi Shimon is not allowing you to take to disassemble the sukkah. Disassembling the sukkah on Yantiv would be an Isra Daraisa. What he's saying is that if in the event the sukkah were to fall down, and even though, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this wood would be muksa, because since this wood was part of the sukkah structure, and since one is not allowed to disassemble it, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, the wood has the status of muksa, but according to Rabbi Shimon, no. Meaning once when it was part of the structure, so then you're not allowed to take it down. But once the sukkah comes apart, so then Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the concept of muksa. And so therefore you could take the wood at that point in time. That's what Rabbi Shimon says. That's what he means when he says Rabbi Shimon's matir. V'shavim b'sukkah ha-chag, b'chag, shihi asura. V'im hisna Allah kolafitana'o. Ah. But here's where Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda are going to agree. And that is when we're talking about a sukkah on sukkah. So now we're talking about a sukkah, capital S. We're talking about a sukkah that was built and set aside for the mitzvah of sukkah. So under these circumstances, we're both in agreement that because it was huksa la mitzvah, so then I cannot take the wood if in the event that the sukkah came down, I can't take the wood of the sukkah, and even Rabbi Shimon would agree. V'im hisna ala kolafita now. Now, if you did make it tonight, so everything is going to follow the tonight, as we learned in the previous brisa. And what we find over here is the following. We have just successfully concluded that the author of the previous brisa is Rabbi Shimon. Why? Because now in this brisa that we just quoted, clearly we see that Rabbi Shimon is of the position that that according to Rabbi Shimon, one would be prohibited from making usage of the wood of the sukkah because it was huksa l'mitzvah. Okay, so we have just concluded now that according to Rabbi Shimon, all you need in order for something to become muksa is the concept as a principle of huksa l'mitzvah. Now, just as a technical point in the Gemara, we just quoted two brisas. There was really no need to quote the first brisa, meaning the second brisa said it very clearly. Why did the Gemara go through the trouble of quoting the first brisa if ultimately the Gemara turns now to the second brisa? And you can see Rashi over here, where Rashi is sensitive to this idea. But the second Rashi points out the second brisa is more authoritative. It follows the brisas of Rabbi Chiya. The brisas of Rabbi Chiya are more authoritative. Okay, see the Rashi for that. Anyway, but what comes out now is that we've just concluded that according to Rabbi Shimon, he does subscribe to the idea that once it's huksa l'mitzvah, that's enough. That's enough. You don't need the huksa l'mitzvah and huksa l'isuro like the Gemara proposed at the beginning. So the Gemara says, fine. So the Gemara says, ke'in shemen shebenir ka'amrinan. What we meant, and this is part of Rav Yochanan's answer to Reish Lakish, is that it just simply has to be like Shemin Shebener. Hov huksa l'mitzvasa, huksa l'isuro. In other words, because it's huksa l'mitzvah, so as a result of that, it is going to be huksa l'isuro. Meaning, you don't need two factors in order for something to be muksa. When the lamp is lit on Shabbos, meaning while it's lit on Shabbos, so now it's set aside for the mitzvah. Well, once it's set aside for the mitzvah, so now it's going to be muksa during that duration. Much like the sukkah on sukkahs, as long as it's set aside for the mitzvah, and according to Rabbi Shimon, that will be for all 7 days. So therefore, it's going to be huksa l'isuro, meaning then it's going to be muksa. It Ranami the Gemara now concludes that this is in fact the correct understanding of Rabbi Shimon. Am Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Ein muksa l'Rabbi Shimon, Ela ke'ein shemen shemener b'shar shu dolek. The only thing that's going to be muksa is going to be an example of the lamp. As an example, but only while it's lit. Hold the huksa l'mitzvah, so huksa l'isuro. And here, in quoting Rabbi Yochanan and his understanding of Rabbi Shimon, what do you see? That because it's huksa l'mitzvah, therefore it's going to be huksa l'isuro. Meaning, but the only critical factor, according to Rabbi Shimon, is that it's set aside for the mitzvah. And only while it's set aside for the mitzvah, then it's going to be muksa. Once it's no longer needed for the mitzvah, i.e. the lamp went out, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not going to be muksa even for the remainder of Shabbos. Continuing in the Gemara, that we have now gave definition to Rabbi Shimon's Muksa. So the Gemara now is going to try to give voice to if there's any other consideration that would make something Muksa for the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. I'm Rabbi Yudah Mashmolei Muksa le Rabbi Shimon, ala Grogers v'tzi Mukim Bavad. What is going to be Muksa for Rabbi Shimon? That's going to be Grogers v'tzi Mukim. Figs and raisins. Back in the day, when they wanted to make their dried fruit, their figs and their raisins, when we say figs over here, we mean dried figs. So back in the day, so what they would do is that they would take their fresh figs and they would take their fresh grapes and they would put it on the rooftop and they would sun dry them in order so that they become these dried figs and raisins. And obviously, when they went up on the roof, you clearly are now stating that I am not making use of them for the immediate usage. I'm obviously putting them aside so that I can enjoy them at a later point in time. And I know we kind of entertained this idea earlier in the daf. This is what we described as dichui biyadayim. The Gemara says, but here, when I'm actively putting them aside for a later point in time, that, according to Rabbi Shimon, is going to be muksa. Umidi achrin alav, the Gemara says, that's it. In other words, nothing else. V'atanya, the Gemara says, but what about the following braisa? Hayo'ocha b'sein v'hosir. Let's say someone was eating figs and left some over. V'hela l'gag la'asos me'em gerogaros. And the leftovers, he said, you know what? I want to make dried fruit of it. And he takes the figs up to the roof in order to sun dry them. B'anavim v'hosir. Or let's say he takes grapes. And same thing. Leftover grapes, he puts them on the rooftop. V'hela l'gag la'asos me'em simukim. And he decides that he's going to sun dry them on the rooftop. Lo yochal ad shiazmin. Now, from this point going forward, it's going to be muksa unless he verbally articulates and states that he plans on eating them before Shabbos. Omer ba'afarsikin v'chavushim. You could say the same thing regarding other types of fruits as well. Uvishar kol minei peros, other fruits. Now, Mani, now who is the author of this brisa? Again, here we are dealt with a brisa that is unattributed. And so the Gemara now has to try to resolve who is the author of the brisa. Elam Rabbi Yehuda. Now, as the author of the Brisa Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says it's very hard to imagine. Umahecha de lo dachi b'dam yisle muksa. Rabbi Yehuda maintains that the category of muksa, the scope of muksa, is much wider. You don't need dichui b'yadayim according to Rabbi Yehuda in order to establish muksa. So hecha de dachi b'dam l'kol shekein. Over here, where you are positively putting them aside for a later point in time, that's not a chiddush according to Rabbi Yehuda. Elalav Rabbi Shimon. So it must be that the author of the Brisa is Rabbi Shimon. And so you see over here that it's not just limited to grapes and figs. It would be true by all other fruits as well. To which the Gemara says, no, la'olam Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, no, we can go back to our original suggestion. The author of this brisa is Rabbi Yehuda. V'ochel itzirich le. Because consider, let's look at the context of this brisa. What was he doing with the fresh figs and the fresh grapes? He was eating them. So sakadas kamina came into ka'acha v'azil. Since he was eating them, loli by hazmana. So that means to say that they don't need any kind of special designation where he has to articulate and state that I plan on eating them this Shabbos. In other words, the history is that he was eating the grapes and he was eating the figs. So kamash malan kevin de'alan l'gag asuchi asach l'dayte minayo. The chiddush over here is that once he brought it up to the roof, so that clearly shows that there was hesach hadas. He has now in his mind clearly and with his actions of bringing them up to the roof, has clearly articulated that he doesn't plan on eating them until they're dried. And so that now would be muksa, even though he was previously eating them. But the author of the brisa could in fact be Rebbe Yehuda. Ba'mine Rebbe Shimon, bar Rebbe me Rebbe. The Gemara now asks, brings to us a discussion between Rebbe Shimon, bar Rebbe me Rebbe. Now, again, just let's be clear. This Rebbe Shimon, bar Rebbe is not the Rebbe Shimon that we've been discussing through yesterday's daf and today's daf. This is the son of Rebbe. The Rebbe Shimon that we've been discussing is Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai, an earlier Tana. So this is now the son of Rebbe asking the following question from his father. As we now turn to the Amud Beis, Patsile Tamar le Rebbe Shimon Mahu. What would be the halacha regarding eating wrapped dates? Now, when I say wrapped dates, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Patsile Tamara, Tamar manilkatim konen bishulam. So the dates were picked off the tree, but before they were ripe. And what they would do is that they would basically make a palm wrap. In other words, they would take a palm leaf and they would wrap the dates within the palm leaf. And this is a way of accelerating its development so that it would ripen even though now it's off the tree. And the question now that Rebbe's son is asking Rebbe is, can I eat them before they're fully ripened? Would this fall under the category of grogers v'tzimukim? And Amarle, and Rebbe responds to his son, Ein muksa l'Rebbe Shimon ela grogers v'tzimukim bavad. No, the only thing that is going to be muksa is grogers v'tzimukim, meaning only these things which clearly when left to dry are something which is mikatse bedas, that's something that you are clearly putting away for a future time. So these and only these are going to be muksa according to Rebbe Shimon, but all other fruits are not going to be muksa according to Rebbe Shimon. Now this back and forth between Rebbe's son and Rebbe seems to be predicated on the fact that Rebbe himself does in fact subscribe to the shita of Rebbe Shimon. And to which now the Gemara says as a follow-up, what? What just happened? Rebbe leis le muksa? You mean to tell me that Rebbe doesn't subscribe to muksa? Meaning he doesn't subscribe to the shita of Rebbe Yehuda? Vatana, the Gemara has the following mishnah. This mishnah is found in Masech Tebeitza. Ein mashikim v'shoftan esamid barios. One is not allowed to, now literally water, we're using water over here as a verb. And water over here means is that before they were shecht animals, that minhag back in the day was to hydrate the animals before shechting the animals. The purpose of hydrating the animal before shechting the animal is that the flaying of the animal becomes much easier if the animal was properly hydrated before it was shechted. And so the Mishnah Beitza says, Ein mashkim v'shoftan esamid barios. If you have wild animals, so one is not allowed to water them and shecht them on Yontav. Now, obviously, on Yontav, there's a heter v'ochel nefesh. On the other hand, there's also an idea of muksa by Yontav as well. These are wild animals. These are not animals that were penned, and therefore, you did not have them in mind going into Yontav. Avamashkim v'shoftan esabaisos. But if they're domesticated animals, so then one would, in fact, be allowed to water and shecht them on Yontav. Vitanya. That was a Mishnah. Vitanya, we learned on the Brisa, Elohim Midbaris. Now we're giving definition. What's a wild animal? What's a domestic animal? Any animal that leaves the pen around the springtime, comes back in the late fall, early winter, with the rainy season, Baisos. That's going to be a domestic animal. Any animal that leaves Tchum but comes back and does so within a day. So Rebbe Omer, the first category, I confused myself. The first category where it goes out in the springtime and comes back in the late fall, early winter. So those are midbarios. Those are wild animals. Any animal that comes back to pasture within the day, that's a domesticated animal. Fine. Rebbe Omer, and on this Rebbe says the following. Eilav eilav aishasein. Now Rebbe says no. These are both domestic animals. Both the even the animals that go out for a season but comes back within the year, that's a domesticated animal as well. Ve'elohein midbarios, Rebbe says, what is a midbar? What's a wild animal? Kosher rosh ba'alfar. When it grazes in the pasture, ve'enech nasos liyishu, but it never comes back into the pen. Lo biyamas chama, ve'lo biyamas akshame. Meaning, it's a wild animal, and it doesn't come back to the pen at any point in time. Okay, fine. And we just had this debate of what's a baisos, what's a midbarios. The entire discussion over here is predicated on we subscribe to muksa. And if we subscribe to muksa, so that means to say then that you see clearly the only issue over here is which animals are muksa because they're wild, which ones are domesticated. But the entire discussion is predicated on the fact that Rebbe subscribes to muksa. So you see over here that Rebbe does in fact subscribe to muksa. And how is Rebbe and his son having a discussion regarding the shita of Rebbe Shimon, when meanwhile it's pretty clear over here that Rebbe subscribes to muksa, meaning the wider scope of muksa, Rebbe Yehuda's muksa. The Gemara makes a couple suggestions. One is that maybe The wild animals are going to be categorically the same thing as raisins and dried figs. Just like according to Rabbi Shimon, he agrees that by dried figs and raisins, they would in fact be muksa because they were nidche biyadaim, they were pushed off. So the Gemara suggests that maybe the wild animals fit categorically in the same category. Otherwise stated, Rabbi of course subscribes to Rabbi Shimon, but over here the possibility is that this is just simply an application of the idea of dried figs and raisins. Or maybe the discussion, the dialogue that took place, that takes place between Rebbe and his son, was only trying to understand the sheet of Rebbe Shimon, but Rebbe himself doesn't subscribe to the sheet of Rebbe Shimon; he subscribes to Rebbe Yehuda. Or maybe when having the discussion regarding what's a wild animal, what's a domesticated animal, maybe Rebbe, even though he was arguing on the definitions, he was not espousing his own personal viewpoint. He was just simply saying that if you one were to subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda, here's what the definition is of a wild animal. Here's what a domesticated animal is. Lidi dileisle muksaklal. And Rebbe is saying, look, I'll participate in this conversation, but I don't subscribe to muksa. I subscribe to Rabbi Shimon. But lidi chua. But according to you, odilimias. But at least admit to me, dehechud yosus bepesach manichnasus berevia debaisos ninu. And that, but if the animal, even though it leaves in the springtime, it comes back in the late fall, but that should be considered something which is domesticated. And the Chachamim say, no, those are wild animals. He's participating in the conversation, but he doesn't agree with the assumption that we subscribe to Muksa. So, to summarize the Gemara, since the top of the Amud, does Rebbe subscribe to Rebbe Shimon's viewpoint or Rebbe Huda's viewpoint? Unclear. Meaning, even though his son and he had a dialogue regarding the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, so it could be that they were just trying to understand Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, or in fact, he subscribes to Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint. And so we leave this one particular point unclear in terms of what Rabbi himself holds of. Rav, let's go over now who holds like Rabbi Huda, who holds like Rabbi Shimon, as we have now seen over the course of the daf. Since the beginning of the daf today, on the top of Mem Hamad Aleph, we had the sheet of Rav. Rav clearly subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Huda and not that of Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara at the balance of the Amud Aleph of today's daf goes over what exactly would Rabbi Shimon consider to be muksa. His scope of muksa is extraordinarily limited. What would be muksa? And we basically walked away with 2 points regarding Rabbi Shimon and muksa. One, if it's huksa la mitzvah, as long as it is currently in use of a mitzvah, so then according to Rabbi Shimon, it's muksa. Like for example, while the Shabbos licht are lit, that is going to be muksa. Once it goes out, it's no longer muksa. When the sukkah is set aside for the mitzvah of sukkah, that's going to be muksa. So once it's huksa la mitzvah, so huksa la isuro. A second point we said regarding Rabbi Shimon is that simukim v'grogorus, raisins and figs that are left out to dry, those are active activities which clearly indicate that I do not want to make usage of them until they are prepared at a later point in time. That's going to be muksa according to Rabbi Shimon as well. And a sub-question within that, is that Rabbi Shimon limited to just raisins and figs, or does it include other fruits as well? That was a discussion. And then we just finished the discussion of where does Rebbe stand on this issue. Now, Rebbe's a Tana, he's not an Amora, but obviously he's a late generation Tana. And where does he stand on this issue that was discussed amongst the early Tanaim? Unclear. We continue in the Gemara. Now we are going to be discussing the Shita of Rebbe Yochanan. Where does Rebbe Yochanan fall on this divide of Muksa between Rebbe Shimon and Rebbe Yehuda? Amar Rebbe Bar Bechanan, Amar Rebbe Yochanan, Amar Halacha k'Rebbe Shimon. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rebbe Yochanan that the Halacha falls like Rebbe Shimon. The Gemara says, is that correct? Is that true? Me Amar Rebbe Yochanan Hachi, is that really true? V'ha b'aminei ha'u saba kruya v'amrilei sruya mi Rebbe Yochanan. But this elder from Kruya, name of a place, or Siruya, right? Another name of a place. So the following dialogue took place between him and Rabbi Yochanan. Kinesh Shatana goes, Malatatula b'Shabbos. So, is one allowed to move a chicken coop on Shabbos? Amar le klum asuya el tarnagolim. Rabbi Yochanan's answer is that what are you talking about? It's made for the chickens. He's asking rhetorically. Amalei klum asur ye'el al-tarnagolim. Is it only made for the chickens? Meaning it has other usages as well. And so... The Gemara now, based on this dialogue that takes place between Rav Yochanan and the one asking, I was right the first time. Sorry, I'm sorry. I was right the first time. Rashi writes Ela Tarnagolim Hilka Chavalei Malachto Leisur, meaning it's made for the chickens, and so therefore it's going to be Muksa. Okay, so how can you tell me? Meaning, how can Rabbi Barachana say that Rav Yochanan says Allah is like Rabbi Shimon when someone asked him a question of Muksa? So Rav Yochanan's response is clearly working within the position of Rav Yehuda, not Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, "Hachav ma'iskinan de isbe efroch meis." So the Gemara says, "No, that this particular chicken coop that was asked about had a dead chicken in it on Shabbos. So now, because it had a dead chicken in it, so now the chicken coop is a basis ledavar ha'aser." So the Gemara says, "Hanich lamar bar meimar mishmei de Rabbi de Amar modai Rabbi Shimon bebalei chaim shemesu shasurim." So the Gemara says, "Okay." So what we're trying to do is we're trying to set Rabbi Yochanan to the side of Rabbi Shimon. And the only reason why he said it's muksa is because for the chickens themselves, for the live chickens, Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe that they're muksa. But what the Gemara is now suggesting is that the reason why Rabbi Yochanan said that this particular chicken coop was muksa is because it had a dead chicken inside. The Gemara says that's fine, but you have to therefore assume that according to Rabbi Shimon, a dead chicken is in fact muksa. So fine, so there is a viewpoint that according to Rabbi Shimon, a dead animal is going to be muksa. But there is another school of thought that within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, a dead animal, even if it dies on Shabbos, is not going to be muksa. So then ma'ik lamemar. So then this answer of Yochanan establishing that this chicken coop is going to be muksa, and even if we're trying to argue that it has a dead chicken inside, if in fact he subscribed to Rabbi Shimon, his conclusion would be that it's not muksa. So So the Gemara says, well, okay, this chicken coop had an egg in it. And right now the Gemara is assuming that the egg was laid on Yontif. I'm sorry, Shabbos. That the egg was laid on Shabbos. And what the Gemara now is assuming is that, yes, Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Muksa, but he does hold of Nolad. Now, anything that is brought into the world on Shabbos or on Yontif has a category of Nolad. The classic example which we're discussing right now is an egg that's laid on Shabbos. The beginning of Masech debates that we're talking about an egg that's laid on Yontif, but it's the same basic idea. And Nolad, right now the Gemara is thinking, Nolad is almost like a super Muksa. In other words, it was something that wasn't in existence before Shabbos. It comes into existence on Shabbos. And so therefore, this is something that even Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't normally subscribe to Muksa, so he would subscribe to this type of Muksa. So V'hamar Rav Nachman, the Gemara says, yes, but Rav Nachman taught us, we saw this back in Beitza, and we're seeing it right here in the Gemara and Shabbos, in the Muksa discussion. Mandi Yisle Muksa Yisle Nolan. And Delesle Muksa Lesle Nolan. So the Gemara says, Nolan is not a super Muksa. It's a category of Muksa. But if I subscribe to Muksa, I subscribe to Nolan. If I don't subscribe to Muksa, I don't subscribe to Nolan. And Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't subscribe to Muksa, is not going to subscribe to Nolan. So the Gemara says, fine. De isbe beitzas efroach. So the Gemara says, okay, but here's what we can conjecture. We could suggest that the coop in question that was posed to Rabbi Yochanan, whether or not it's Muksa, it had an egg, it had a fertilized egg. It had a fertilized egg inside. And the Gemara says, this, according to Rabbi Yochanan, sorry, let's say it better. This, according to Rabbi Shimon, is going to be Muksa. Now, why should Rabbi Shimon agree that this is going to be Muksa? Rashi writes very succinctly, Kalav lo achole mishum klipa, meaning, look, the reason why a dead animal, according to Rabbi Shimon, is not going to be Muksa is because you can give it to your animal. In other words, you can feed it to your dog. But if I have a egg with a chick developing inside, so now it's not consumable by humans, and it's also not consumable by animals because of the hard shell around it. So here, just simply because of the pragmatic nature of this particular egg, where it is not human consumption, it can't be consumed by a human, can't be consumed by an animal, and so therefore Rabbi Shimon would concede that under this circumstance, it would in fact be muksa. Okay. So the Gemara has admittedly bent a little bit over, a little bit backwards, twisted a little bit, in order to suggest that Rabbi Yochanan does in fact follow the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, even though he established that this particular chicken coop is Muksa, but the Gemara gave an Ukimta, in which even Rabbi Shimon would agree that this particular chicken coop would be Muksa, and so therefore we can maintain course and follow that Rabbi Yochanan really follows the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Now the reason why the Gemara wants to do this is because of our original report, which was given to us by Rabbi Bar Chana, that Rabbi Yochanan subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. Continuing in the Gemara, Ki asa Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef amar Rabbi Yochanan halachik Rabbi Yehuda. Ah, but now the Gemara is going to give us other reports regarding Rabbi Yochanan, and the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef that Rabbi Yochanan does in fact subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi amar halachik Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, on the other hand, follows the halacha to be like Rabbi Shimon. But anyway, but we have now another report regarding how does Rabbi Yochanan hold. Amar Rabbi Yosef Hainu da amar Rabbi Barchana amar Rabbi Yochanan. Amru halacha ke Rabbi Shimon. Amru v'lei lo svirulei. Now here, an important shift of language. And when Rabbi Bar Chana says that the halacha is Rabbi Yochanan, so over here, it was Amru halacha ke Rabbi Shimon. Meaning, in the original report that was given to us, what he said is that they said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. V'amru v'lei lo svirulei. Meaning, others say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, but as far as Rabbi Yochanan himself is concerned, the halacha does not follow like Rabbi Shimon, but rather he follows like Rabbi Yochanan. This will be a good place to stop because the continuation is a dialogue that goes into tomorrow's daf. Let us quickly recap and summarize the daf so far. We had an extensive discussion over the course of today's daf in terms of two basic ideas. One, the machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not there is a larger scope of muksa like Rabbi Yehuda, or a very narrow scope of muksa like Rabbi Shimon. So where do the later Tanayim and Amoraim fall on this issue? And in the course of today's daf, we were treated to the positions of two Amoraim, one Tana. Rav is clearly of the position, like Rabbi Yehuda, that we subscribe to the wider scope of Muksa. Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara concluded that Rabbi Yochanan also subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda, the wider scope of Muksa. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, unclear. A short dialogue between his son and himself regarding the Shita Rabbi Shimon, but it could be that they were either subscribing to Rabbi Shimon or just simply trying to understand the Shita Rabbi Shimon better, even though they themselves don't hold the Rabbi Shimon. That is one major point of today's daf. And the other major point of today's daf is what exactly is the scope of Muksa according to Rabbi Shimon. Despite the fact that the Gemara repeatedly says, Leiflei Muksa le Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold the Muksa, it means that his parameter of muksa is just very small. And what exactly is it going to include? And what exactly is going to be the definition of muksa according to Rabbi Shimon? So that is a second point, the second major point that was discussed in today's daf. And what we came out with from today are two conclusions within Rabbi Shimon. One is that when something is set aside for the mitzvah, while it is in usage of the mitzvah, it is muksa for that period of time. So for the Shabbos lift, according to Rabbi Shimon, while they're lit, they're muksa. Once it goes out, it's not muksa. The sukkah, while it's being used as a sukkah, is muksa. Once once sukkah is done, it's not muksa anymore. And the other muksa consideration for Rabbi Shimon is grogrim v'tzimukin. When I do something that clearly shows, that articulates that I don't plan on using it in the immediate future, and I'm putting it aside for a later period of time, like the drying of grapes and the drying of figs, so that would be muksa as well for Rabbi Shimon. Would that include other dried fruit as well? Debatable. The Gemara debated in the course of today's daf. And those are the two big ideas that come out of today's daf.